Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about tales of Irish intrigue in Australia. And in these tales, there's these controversies, people not quite being able to say what's going on, mystery, mystique associated with it, but also irony as people are reacting to things playing out, and because of the mysteries, the world has moved on and changed, and these are these deep mysterious tales, and there's lots of mysterious tales of in science as well, in terms of where people die, things explode, things are covered up. This is the most amazing stories, but going very deep, there's this Irish story, and I'm many generations ago Hark from Ireland, various brothers and whole Irish families came out to the shores, as some as convicts, some as political prisoners, the whole gamut. I don't know if there's anyone who actually voluntarily came out to Australia. I'm not sure on it. And because of that, because of the stress in which it's sort of complicated thing that they came off, it might be very simple for people to say, oh, look, you're found guilty of this, you're out there. It's from the person actually being brought out, it's a very stressful, complex system, and it's a sort of a very strange nucleus of strange sort of bizarre nucleus of influence there. So let's sort of go, we were back in history before the Renaissance in medieval England and pagan England. One of the interesting things is that Ireland converted to Christianity very quickly, very early on, and one doesn't know whether the formula was just right for it to occur, what the scenarios were. But the Irish missionaries, people from Ireland, there's English missionaries that went across, and then England and the Irish people were missionaries down into Europe. So Northern Europe was pagan, and England was a source of conversion. And when you come to think of it, it's sort of like a Norse group which was converted to Christianity, and it spoke the language, the Norse language, and they were able to conduct missionary operations in 800-900 AD. It's various missions coming south, and I think there was even an English Pope at one stage coming down. So it's that force of an idea, and the actual seat of learning, or the evolution of the church, or of the thinking, actually occurred up in England. It occurred, there was a Renaissance. If you can imagine, the Renaissance was a great period, but the actual medieval, more slowly clunking thing happened in Ireland and England. Sort of like the Renaissance was a wild, sort of like the party world, and this was a more stoic belief. Sort of like the Renaissance and the Enlightenment got ahead. So Ireland was a bit left out. That's just my general impression. And so when England went Protestants, as the Renaissance, you do in the Renaissance, you become Protestants and you start to move away from the programming. This base level of very fundamental programming stayed, and this sort of meant that there's conflict between England and Ireland. Irish Ireland's very Catholic and ideally put down because it's got no alliance borders with it. No one could come to the rescue of people in Ireland. And through the various English Civil War, one of the things that Cromwell did was he settled the Irish question, the Irish rebellion. So it was like a backyard experimental colony. You could actually exploit this other country. It was just near, you could go over and exploit it. Yet inside it was like the act of exploiting it actually kept it backwards and kept it a bit more scholastic ancient world, a less confused world of the Enlightenment. And of course, as this filtered through at a different level. So we come over to the Irish coming to Australia, and the Irish convicts were considered particularly with contempt. You've got to actually understand that early Australia, there was one aspect, the emancipists, these people said, served their time, just walked off and began being industrious. So there's this emancipist viewpoint, but there's also a contemptocracy. This is the people who weren't prisoners and convicts believed or had a worldview corresponding to the English worldview of class system, which sort of looked down. And this looking down was associated with the Irish convicts. And so much so that the Irish convicts were almost half pitied. When they were coming on the boats to Australia, they would go past the icebergs, because one of the things you do is you go down to the Southern Sea, there's a bloody big wind there that blows you across to Australia a few weeks faster, but you have to dodge icebergs as you go, and icebergs are nice, convenient mid-ocean watering holes, if you know how to do it. So these convicts were, you can imagine, not well clothed, in the decks, it would be bloody freezing the Southern Ocean, but they would work out from this that they somehow, because they're not told anything, they think they're still in the Northern Hemisphere, got geometry completely wrong, and they would walk south to China. They'd just say, bugger this, and throw their tools down. So they had the problem of that the Irish convicts, after all this thing, not really understanding what was going on, would walk, just leave the farms. So what would happen is that you'd be given the process was Australia, it was just too hard. So they said, the king owns it all, it's crown land, and the king will give you a gift of land. They'll give you a grant of land, which is a gift. So you can't steal land. Don't ever you have to steal it. It's not stolen by law, and the law was declared. So someone held out a sheet of paper and yelled at the top of their voice, blah, 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 we own it all. And then they'd give it a grant. And so you'd be given a grant and a few convicts to help. And what would happen, I think it was an Irish uprising, and it's very interesting, even at this stage, that you know, the worst thing you could do is put an Irish intellectual in with the Irish people, because then they had to speak and organise and get themselves organised. It's a big effort to separate anyone with an education from the rest of the Irish convicts, and you can actually see this in I'm trying to think, not Norfolk Island, there's this Tasmanian, this is my big brain problem, I can't think of it. Really, it's gone from my memory. It'll come back at some stage. But there'll be, if you look at the convict settlement, there's the convict places, but then there's houses up on the hill, which they put the political prisoners to get them separate. And there's a lot of stories of that going on between the Irish intellectuals, who essentially would have a highfalutin post-Enlightenment idea, and they'd come and negotiate with the government of Australia, and just get blown away, double-crossed, and all that type of stuff, simply because that move actually moved ahead of the thinking of the people running the joint. I'm just doing this very, very quickly. So there's rebellions and various things out here, and if you look at the history of it, rather than the detail of blow by blow, you can see in general that it was a sort of different ideas flowing in at different rates going ahead. So Australia, it's hard to say, there was these strings of Enlightenment advanced thinking, but a large amount of the population was not thinking for themselves. They were all very much thinking in terms of the social structures of England, support, I don't know, inferiority, and all that type of stuff. And so what's very interesting is some of the Catholic stories, mystery stories, I've heard of, and I don't know whether they're true. Now, this is one of the more joyful aspects. I do know certain aspects of it's true, but then not knowing whether it's true is part of the mystique. You sort of leave, and you go, it's interesting. I can't really tell anybody about it because I don't know whether that's true. This is the background stuff, and you've got Australia lurching forward. I think we've actually been suckered in. You know, our whole country has been suckered in on a few scams, and we still believe it intensely. And some of this reading, you see that, oh, no, not everyone's wised up to the scam aspect of it. But what I want to do in this one is talk about some of the real mysteries of the things. So one of the things is that the Catholic, for some reason, got a lot of key land around the city and in Australia. I know this one story of it from a grand uncle, and what they would do is get into the Surveyor's General's Department and be at critical points in time, and a lot of the land would go. So I definitely know that's true in Western Australia, because I do have Irish relatives in which that's involved. And I could go a beautiful story of the gold fields and the hotels and the gold fields in Western Australia. But let's go back to the points that I want to do. People say, oh, this is outrageous, outrageous. So a large amount of rural land in Melbourne was owned by the Catholic Church, and from 1890, you've got to remember that Australia just went from, lurched from one recession, gold rush recession, drought, everything was going on. So 1890 to 1910, a large amount of inner Melbourne, the wealthy suburbs, were owned by the Catholic Church. And a large amount of this suburb called Kew, so it's on the Yarra River, a certain back. So Melbourne is where the Melbourne International Tennis goes across. It's got a river, you know, through skyscrapers, a general flat, a few hills in the background, a big bay. So I had to describe Melbourne. So a large fraction of this land was owned by the Catholic Church. And what I has been told to me, I do know it's certain aspects of history, that this particular priest, I think he was a Jesuit priest, sold, and basically, fraudulently sold the land and kept the money for himself, and then just hightailed off to South America. And there indeed, there is some sort of, some truth to it. So certain areas of land were owned and sold. So where I went to school was on the hill, and the other sections of the suburb were, used to be Catholic land and sold, if that makes sense. But what was also told to me is that if you crossed the Catholic Church, they would eventually find you. And that it was a dumb thing going to South America because of the large amount of Catholics, Catholics there. So this particular person, I don't know what the history is. I'm sure history buffs will work to find out who he is, just disappeared. So I just wish I can tell you it's really, in today's money, billions of dollars, or billions of dollars land nowadays. It was sold. It was then. It was farming land to come across. And of course, the suburb where I grew up, there used to be before. You know, the older people used to remember paddocks and horses. And in fact, out the back of where I was, there used to be horses and creeks and all that type of stuff. So that's one of it in terms of the Catholic intrigue. And then there's another story. The primary school I went to was the old Austro-Hungarian embassy. It was opposite another a group of higher value Catholic buildings. One is the Archbishop's residence, which has been sold to a Jewish businessman who eventually died, but who was corrupt as well, we understand. There's a seminary. And in the same sort of complex was the Austro-Hungarian embassy. And now, what actually happened in that time is a lot of the German or the Hungarian stuff, which is, I suppose, still Catholic, was given to the Catholic Church. It was always declared and part of not just losing the land to the Australian government, it was given to the Catholic Church. And also this led to a fairly complex relationship between objection, the Irish, and how the Irish looked at World War II. That's not World War I. You also have the Irish uprising. So there's a lot of politics. So before World War I, I think possibly even in World War I, there was an Irish uprising in Ireland, because Ireland was still, I think at that stage, part of Britain. So there's a lot of complexity there in terms of the Irish influence in Australia, and being a subdued culture, being pulled out to Australia, also a subdued culture, not being subversive, but having interests not aligned with the prevailing Union Jack. Of course, the Union Jack has disappeared, and so a lot of these mysteries are wrong-footing themselves because they're still reacting to them. And so one of these fantastic, this Austrian embassy, well, it was an embassy because Australia was only federated 10 years before, so they'd have embassies around the place. It was a fairly swish thing with lovely architecture and cost a bomb to maintain, I suppose. Now, Birkhall. But there's all these secret stories and secret Catholic things, and of course the practice of Catholic religion was banned by Britain. So this is hard to believe, that the Catholic Church was originally banned in Australia. So the masses had to be said in secret, and there's smuggling priests, all this type of stuff, which was sort of going on in the Elizabethan England. You've got bloody, the Catholic, Protestant stuff. It all doesn't make sense, but it was all carried out in Australia. Now, what happens is that a lot of the cultures which come out to Australia, because it's a long way away, because they have got no reference, and the influences which are changing their home culture have left, they've got sort of a frozen culture. Their culture comes out and they're frozen, so a lot of people, a lot of the Greeks who came out in the 1960s don't really relate to modern Greeks who's come out, because modern Greeks have had a modern time, and so they're sort of like visiting like a theme park going back on. So there's all these complex issues which are here, and it really brings into the fundamental idea that you do have this underlying culture of a prison, well, basically the prison culture, where new ideas could they be escape plans? Is this undermining what we're all here about? But what we're all here about and what we're trying to do has the culture which put us here, or the thinking of it, those people have long gone, and the culture that they're conforming with it has gone, yet we're dealing with the ghost of situations which are putting it down. And look, so there's all these hidden cultures and hidden things coming along. And this is the large amount of land sold off, and the shame of someone in a large institution double crossing them, so this is really not mentioned, and the complexity of receiving large amounts of land or benefit from an adversary in World War I, and the complexity of accepting that and moving forward and not asking questions, and the complexity built in, you've built into the culture DNA of suppressing certain people, certain groups within your group, and trying to separate intellectuals away from your working group, so that you can encompass them for a reason, which has disappeared. It's sort of like it's very interesting in terms of how to sever ties with the previous people which came across. And Cortez, when he was invading Mexico, said, "We're having an invasion, and look at those things. What I'm doing, I'm burning your ships." So he burnt his ships that he came in, saying, "We're here to invade, guys. We're conquistadoring." And in a certain sense, that didn't happen. There's always ships to take people back to Britain, and it meant that not as a broad church of beliefs, but the back and forth, going back to Britain and Australia, going back and forth in ships, steamships, didn't actually take the whole sample of the society. It sort of tended to really focus upon a commercial, higher end of society, the ultra rich, going here, and you've got different chains. It just wasn't a simple transfer. It was a transfer between different cultures, very select sections of different cultures, and very select sections of British, the upper class British, the riffraff, and coming across. And then there's just so many thousands and thousands of dimensions going across, and the scandal, and the fact that we haven't processed it, and we're not processing it because of a reason that has long, long since gone. I hope this gives some sort of entertainment. I know what I'm talking about. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.